Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
We're now refinancing at much higher interest rates. If we're blessed, you know, 10 years, a little over a 4, but that thing used to be at 0.6, 0.7. That gap is why we estimate, and so does Treasury, so does OMB, that we're going to spend over $1 trillion interest, and now it's our second biggest expense. And it just continues.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert on why the federal debt and high interest rates are so concerning.
Have you think about this? We actually had 2 months last year. Now, this is timing effects when tax receipts come in and those things, where we were borrowing to make our interest payments. Think about that. We were borrowing to be able to pay for our borrowing.
This is Agriculture Today.
The size of the crop in terms of what's left at the end of the marketing year, the ending stocks, grew for corn and it grew for soybeans.
Bob Mowers with Manduca Trading in Chicago, and the trade still digging into USDA's latest report.
So net, in terms of the overall trade, I don't think there was a whole lot of information that would add fuel to the fire for anybody wanting to be bullish. And I don't think there was a whole lot of data that came out of that, at least my interpretation of it, that was overwhelmingly bearish. So more of a neutral report. But nonetheless, you know, at least we see what the USDA is thinking, and it kind of gives an idea of, at least from their perspective, another set of data to kind of work with. The interesting thing, though, is USDA does its guesstimates. But I know, as you and I speak as often as we do with your listeners out there, I also cite others. And we've got CONAB down in South America. We've got Sofras down there. And those are entities that are giving their estimates also. And we still have a range of expectations. So there's not one consensus, and that's what makes the market, right? It's whether or not you're going to believe it's going to come in a little bit on the lower side or a little bit on the higher side, and that can get tweaked week by week based on things like supply-demand numbers that come out, export sales, and then also obviously weather and events that like happen like that, and then also geopolitical things that could rock the country. But nonetheless, the reason I bring this up is because the USDA has the production at 161. That's a million metric tons. CONAB for Brazil, we're talking about Brazil, is 160.2, and then Sofras is 158.23. So, I mean, there's 3 million metric tons difference in some of those, in those three estimates right there between three well-known entities that are supposedly have their ducks in a row in terms of giving us the numbers. So that's what makes markets. So we got the USDA's expectation, but still there is some variation there. And that's for soybeans. About the same story for corn. The USDA's Brazil corn production, just a reminder, are 129 million metric tons, and CONAB has 118.53 versus 129. That's a 10.5 million metric ton differential. Not quite 10% of the overall numbers that are there, but, you know, somewhere close. Let's call it 8% or something like that, which is huge. So, you know, even though we got the numbers and the market kind of yawned, it's kind of going to be a wait and see. I just felt like the USDA didn't really want to change too much this early in the crop season for development down in South America. We pretty much kind of got a great feel of what we produced here in the U.S. with the last marketing year, but there's still unknowns down there in South America. So that's basically a long story of what I think happened with the USDA report and the fact that it's still not a definite, right, because it's got some difference in those guesstimates. So we'll see how that all plays out. And then it's just kind of back off to the week to week and see what other things are impacted in the marketplace besides those export sales we might see on occasion. You know, for soybeans, it's what's happening down in Argentina in terms of the weather. Right now it looks pretty darn good. So there's no reason, in my opinion, at this point to think that it's going to be a big surprise in terms of production. I mean, things can change. We know that. But nonetheless, things have come off to a really good start for the production down in Argentina in particular. Brazil, a little bit differential, whether you're looking at the northern or southern part, but net-net, you know, I think right now, at least the worst case fears in terms of dryness on the north side might be abating a bit, which I think is going to help to, you know, probably, even though soybean prices are up 32 cents today, at least kind of stave off any kind of massive rally to the upside. And even though, like I said, we're up 32 cents today, that's not a big move for soybeans. That seems like a pretty typical move for many days.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We got wheat grown in 48 states or 49 states. It's never the same all the way across the board. But just comparing it to the past 2 years, we're already in a better position.
Chandler Gould is president and CEO of the National Association of Wheat Growers.
It's definitely much more optimistic than it has been the last 2 years. At least over a majority of our winter wheat is not in a D3 or D4 drought like it has been. And earlier I was speaking to some of our Oklahoma growers that actually said their winter wheat was a little taller than they had expected it to be this year. So hopefully we are moving out of this drought cycle and can have a couple good years of good production.
But there's been another challenge, and that's foreign ownership of farmland.
Foreign-owned farmland, or basically a foreign country or a foreign company owning farmland, which has become a major issue at many of the state level and here in Washington, D.C. And I am by no means saying that we should allow foreign countries and companies to own a big chunk of our U.S. farmland. It's critical that we maintain and keep that land in U.S. farmers' control. But there is a very big unintended consequence if you just outright ban foreign companies or countries. And really what I'm focusing on is Syngenta, since it is owned by China now instead of the Swiss like it used to be. There are several bills here in Washington, D.C. that would ban companies like Syngenta from owning or even leasing land, and that would have a significant negative impact on wheat research here in the United States.
In the past, when there have been challenges, sometimes government steps in. Things like the Emergency Relief Program, or ERP.
One, the Secretary did come address our wheat growers board last year and told us up front that the money available in this second round of ERP was going to be significantly less. And so we already knew that was coming, but there has been a lot of concern and issue with the implementation. We thought they were going to use the exact same formula that they did in the first round, which really benefited the growers who truly needed the assistance the most. But this new formula that they're using in the second round has really cut too deep and too hard and is not being spread across the areas that really had the disaster. And so NAWS, along with 20-something other organizations, wrote a letter to the Secretary, and I know that at least 60 members between the House and the Senate have also directly complained to the Secretary of Agriculture on the implementation of ERP, what I would call 2.0. And so we continue to push for a reevaluation of how that program is implemented to make sure that those monies are spread out where they need to be and in the amount they should have been.
Is that what Congress had in mind? A couple of wheat growers in Congress right now, including Frank Lucas of Oklahoma, former chairman of the House Ag Committee, and Dan Newhouse from Washington.
That's just icing on the cake if the member actually has firsthand knowledge or is actually a wheat farmer. And as you mentioned, I think those are the only two currently sitting in the House that I'm aware of that actually continue to grow wheat. And both Chairman Lucas and Chairman Newhouser have been champions for NOG and the wheat growers across the U.S. year after year. But the fact that you've got 60 members of Congress saying that there's issues, and it's not just within wheat, corn, and soy, and all the other commodities that were involved in ERP, definitely should get the USDA's attention since they are held accountable to the Congress.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
One of the things I want to start with is apparently I hurt some people's feelings in the last two floor speeches when I walked through the math and some of the reaction I got. And, I don't care.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
It's one of those, the math is the math and the math will win. The math always eventually wins.
He comes to the floor of the House almost once a week, sounding the same alarm.
Because remember, we have a debt and demographics issue. And that's the thing that just enrages me. If you're on the left, you don't tax enough. And we're on the right, you know, we can't cut enough. Which, look, I'm more on the cut side. But you still got a mathematical problem. And that is, and I'll show you in some of the slides, you can get rid of every dime of defense. You can get rid of every dime of discretionary. and you're still borrowing hundreds of billions of dollars. Last year, we borrowed 8.4% of the economy. So you every once in a while hear these discussions, oh, we're going to have a 2% GDP growth. Okay, fine. That's sort of what long-run projection is. We borrowed 8.4. Was just the borrowing, not the spend, the borrow. And it's also one of the reasons we've tried now not to talk in percentages of GDP, because no one has any idea what the hell you're talking about.
Says if you want a balanced budget, it's not that hard.
For those who will text my office, call my office, fuss at me when I'm in Costco and say, David, I want you to balance the budget this year. I can do it. You just have to let me be willing to get rid of all the defense, all the discretionary, and $300, $400 billion of your Medicare. That's how upside down the numbers are.
The scale of the problem is overwhelming.
This fiscal year, so we're, almost 2+ months into this fiscal year, the number one spend will be Social Security. Now, let's talk about this for a moment. Social Security is its own trust fund, its own funding mechanism. None of the money from is spent in the general fund. It's loaned to the general fund, and the Social Security gets these special treasury notes, and then they're paid interest twice a year. And if you ever geek out and you're someone that watches U.S. debt and all of a sudden there's this sudden spike, often that's actually because we made our twice-a-year interest payment to Social Security. But it's separate. But you also got to understand the flip side of that. In 8 years, 9 years, when the Social Security Trust Fund is empty, it doesn't have a claim on the general fund either. That also means, as CBO has projected, CBO puts out a number of 2033. The Social Security actuaries, which I think are a year behind in their reports, had 2034. But let's use CBO. CBO says a 25% cut in your check is coming in 8.5, 9 years. Okay? Average couple in America on Social Security, I think that's like $17,400 cut. We will double poverty of the senior population in America.
Current plans being floated don't solve it.
Right now, it looks like raising the cap on Social Security, doing these other mechanisms, still does not close that $616 billion shortfall. That $616 billion shortfall, that's the very first year the Social Security Trust Fund is gone. Why this isn't talked about constantly here, when defense is like $830 billion, and just the shortfall in a single year on Social Security is over 600?
Which is why some members are wanting to cut all spending. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Whenever we look at our classing office information, the latest report from November 30th shows that the Lubbock classing office has run samples on 810,379 bales.
Mark Brown, Director of Field Services with Plains Cotton Growers.
They're projecting that number is 65% complete. And then down in the LAMESA office, as of November 30th, they had classed 134,000 bales and were estimating a 38% completion rate. So whenever you do the math on all of that, that puts that number somewhere in the range of around 1.6 million bales. And I do need to remind everyone that that will not be the official High Plains number because, especially in the Lubbock office, they are going to be obtaining some samples that are coming in from the bordering states of New Mexico and Oklahoma and Kansas. So all of that will have to be separated out yet. And we had really hoped that we would have that we'd have a less than average year, but we had really hoped that we'd be quite a bit higher in terms of production over last year, but I think those numbers are going to come in fairly similar, unfortunately. So that's kind of where we're at on this growing season. Just was a tough season all the way around. In terms of production nationwide, let me mention that. Let's go to world production first. The current projection is that the world is going to have 113.5 million bales of production. The U.S. is going to have around 13 million bales of production, and Texas is projected to produce 3.6 million. And also, whenever we look at those states out to the east, I know I get a lot of questions on that. And currently, both Arkansas and Georgia have classed over 1 million bales each as of November 30th. So that's where a lot of that production is coming from in the United States. So now we, as we wind this season down, we've got to start thinking about the upcoming season and thinking about where we're at in terms of production this year and in terms of production potential for 2024.
And while the price has not responded to the smaller crop, it's important to remember demand.
Cotton is a discretionary crop, and by that I mean that people, they've got to go to the grocery store and buy groceries every week. However, they can make a shirt or a pair of blue jeans last a little longer than they would like to if that's necessary. And unfortunately, the demand has been down. I just saw a report from O.A. Cleveland, of course, a well-known cotton economist and professor emeritus, and he had an interesting report out called How the Grinch Stole Cotton's Christmas. And I'm going to steal a quote from O.A. Cleveland. He said that cotton's price dilemma currently is not demand. Cotton's price dilemma is demand and not production. And so I think that it's just important that we get some of these global issues solved and are able to develop or to continue to increase the demand for cotton as we look into 2024.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Information about this came out about maybe a month and a half ago, so very new.
Allison Rivera, Executive Director, Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, on the new Weaned Calf Risk Protection Program.
I think this just goes along the lines of in this space where NCBA has been trying to work with USDA, not only for more tools in the toolbox in the risk management space for cattle producers, but specifically maybe more, you know, cow-calf producers. And again, a lot of the work we've been doing is trying to educate producers of the programs that are out there that are available. You know, there's a lot of programs out there under that risk management title. And so we just want to make sure that producers know that there are programs available. This program is very new, so new that we are going to have those who are selling this new pilot program come speak to the Ag and Food Policy Committee meeting at our convention, our NCBA convention in late January, so that producers have the ability to ask very specific questions about this. It is a four-state pilot program, and, you know, I think that it being a new tool specifically for the cow-calf producers out there, we're excited that, you know, there's a new tool out there. So looking forward to kind of diving deeper into this program and making sure that everybody has the correct information on it.
There are other programs available to producers, but this Weaned Calf Risk Protection Program is different.
I think it's specifically an insurance option for our cow-calf producers. Again, four states designed to protect the profitability of their spring calving. We know that weather is going to continue. We know that bad weather is going to continue. And so I think this is just another opportunity for that risk management. The protection would ensure that producers against their calves declining in price due to decreased weaning weight caused by things like drought, which we, you know, right now we're seeing a pretty bad drought in the South, in Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi areas. So excessive moisture, hail, wind, frost, insects, disease, you name it. So as we continue to face more environmental challenges, hard winters in particular, flooding, this is just going to be another tool to protect those cow-calf producers.
Is a pilot program so only available right now in four states?
Colorado, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Texas? And that was a very important question. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners were keen on what states those are. And again, Colorado, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Texas. And again, in a pilot form, USDA will gather information about how the program is being used, whether it's working. And then, as they do with a lot of pilot programs, if it's successful, then we can work with them to expand the coverage for further states.
Since there will be a discussion at the upcoming Cattle Industry Convention and Trade Show, how can you learn more?
Go to ncba.org. We're going to be in Orlando. Who doesn't want to go down to Orlando when it's cold, where everyone else is pretty much coming from? We're going to go down to the Sunshine State and have a really great convention. A lot of great policy work will be done down there, but we're also going to have some fun, and it's great networking for everybody, and we'd love for everyone to meet us there.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
This is such an absurd place, and look, and maybe no one actually cares.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
The time for doing something was actually a couple years ago.
Every week, he continues to sound the alarm on the nation's debt.
Every day we wait, the policy options close because there's things you need to do policy-wise. If you look at all the taxes the left wants to do, I just showed you a slide, it comes in about 1.5, 1.6. percent of GDP. We borrowed 8.4 last year. The things we can cut, I can get you a couple points of GDP we can cut. And I'm willing to do some very difficult cuts. You can't tax enough and you can't cut enough. It's math. And once again, another model out there that shows once you do the actual economic effects of the taxing the rich, it gets you only a fraction of the 10-year deficit. This board is already a year out of date, meaning when it says over the next 30 years we'll have $116 trillion in borrowed money, we have a model in our office that's approaching $130 with higher interest rates. But on this one, $77 trillion of that shortfall over the next 30 years is Medicare. It's healthcare costs. Another one is $38 trillion shortfall if we backfill Social Security and the shortfall there. It is immoral what this body is doing by avoiding, and every day we avoid, you find yourself saying taxes are your only opportunity, though I've just spent the last half an hour trying to explain policy is where the money's at. Making people healthier is the single biggest thing you can do to reduce the U.S. debt. Actually, and you reduce it, but you stabilize it because we're going to continue to grow because we're getting old. And our healthcare costs are going to go up. And could we use technology? Can you use cures? If I could come to you tomorrow and point out the simple fact, 33% of all healthcare spending is diabetes. A revolution in our brothers and sisters with diabetes, which we know how to do it now. We actually have pharmaceuticals that are remarkable, and I'm not thrilled with talking about pharmaceuticals, but it's the math is the math. I sometimes have to deal with the reality in front of us. If you could get diabetes in half in America, well, let's see. 15% of U.S. healthcare costs is about $700 billion a year. So if you cut 33%, so you'd be, and then you'd get the economic effects of people being able to work and other things. So trillion a year. I mean, you start to understand this doesn't have to be dour. It doesn't have to be, dystopian. There is hope. It just requires thinking and maybe owning a calculator and reading. And we're too busy saying the same crap to our voters because they applaud for us, even though it's 20 years out of date, we say the same crap over and over. I've been here 10 years. When I first got elected, 1 out of 8 was 65. Today, it's like 1 out of 5.8 is now 65. Demographics is our destiny.
Why are we incapable of telling each other the truth?
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Last year, we saw U.S. agricultural export and import values growing, with imports growing faster than exports. But so far, in the first 10 months of this calendar year,
now we're seeing decreases in both.
USDA economist Bart Kenner says so far, ag exports are running 11% below a year ago. Imports are down by 2%. Import values had been growing quite a lot, as you remember, because of inflation and higher unit prices. But Kenner says
that inflation has started to ease, and volumes are continuing to stay pretty consistent. And so we're starting to see some of that decrease in import value overall as those prices start to come down a little bit.
So the overall level of U.S. ag trade is declining. And for exports, soybean sales are down 10%, wheat 29%, corn by 33%, cotton by 35%. Gary Crawford, Washington.